Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rick, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Insanity runs in my family.
Practically gallops.
No stems, no seeds that you don't need. Acapulco Gold is.
This is Jake, the most acid I've ever seen anybody eat in my life. Wow, man!
Fire it up, Wolves!
Why don't you get a job, Spicoli?
What for?
You need money.
All I need are some tasty waves, cool buzz, and I'm fine.
Welcome and thanks for tuning in to Revolution Radio. And now it's time for that feral hippie herself, an infotartic, esoteric, eclectic mix of the adventures of that feral hippie, Miss Mona Radler.
What are you people? On dope?
That was my skull! I'm so wasted!
Make a move and the money gets.
Dave's not here!
Alright, Mona, it's all yours. Take it away.
Do 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 do. Welcome one and all. Freedomslips.org, Revolution.radio. We are listener supported on this 23rd day of November, 2023. So please do us a favor. Come to the homepage and do a donate click, a donate click, a donate click. I truly would appreciate it. And thank you. I've been griping for years about this information. But people just don't always listen, do they? Nope. Who reads labels? I do. Who cares about what you put in your body? I do. Or your family's bodies. And you, let's get on with the show.
When we talk about warriors, and it's been amazing to have this show, The High Wire, where we get to talk to people like Jackie Schlegel, show you those victories. Well, one of our favorite guests has been on time and time again is Zen Honeycutt with moms across America doing brilliant work dealing with your food supply, a huge issue, not only injecting you with poisons, but as we already showed you, they want to get away and create liability protection for chemicals that are poisoning your children. Not if Zen Honeycutt has anything to do with it. Take a look at this.
I am so very excited to have Zen Honeycutt, the founding director from Moms Across America.
Zen Honeycutt from Moms Across America.
Zen Honeycutt heads Moms Across America, a group forum to raise awareness about toxic exposures.
This is not what I set out to do. I was a former fashion designer, and then my kids got sick. And like millions of moms and dads across America, you know, I did not know what to do. I did not know why. So I dove into the food supply, GMOs and glyphosate.
We want to trust that what is in the grocery store is safe. And the shocking reality is that in many cases, it's not.
Moms Across America is a national organization of unstoppable moms. And we started this because we really want to empower moms and have healthy kids. And that's our tagline, empowered moms, healthy kids.
We are so proud and happy to have thousands of volunteers across the country, to have groups around the world, to have spoken around the world, to have been in over a dozen international movies around the world.
Our mission is to empower millions to educate themselves about GMOs and related toxins, to offer GMO-free and organic solutions, and through empowering local leadership, we create healthy communities together.
There are GMO foreign proteins in our food since 1996. They first started in the milk, and then they put them in soy and corn, which is in everything that we eat. I was shocked that these foreign proteins were in our food without our knowledge, without our permission, and without labeling.
Most common GMOs are GMOs that are genetically engineered to withstand herbicides, as you see being sprayed right now. This is predominantly GMO soy and other crops that are genetically engineered to withstand glyphosate, the toxic chemical ingredient in Roundup.
And what we're looking at is not just having one company stop using glyphosate, we're going after entire industries. We need to make sure that this chemical is banned. And as a mother, I will not stand for this. I ask every single person to become an activist, to share with everybody, to do whatever you can, and to be very vocal about it.
Well, it's my honor and pleasure to be joined now by Zen Honeycutt, making the trip out. Thank you for joining us. You are just a force to be reckoned with. You know, it's you just don't stop, and I want to thank you for that, because we have to be relentless, because the opposition is just all over everything we're doing.
Thank you so much. I want to thank my team. There are so many people at Moms Across America that have done things like sent in samples of their breast milk, you know, and their children's urine and the school lunch samples and the fast food samples that we're going to be talking about today. So it's not just me. It's an incredible team, as you know, with your team.
You know, one of the things we're talking about preparing for this show, and, you know, some of us are, you know, we cross a spectrum of generations, but my understanding now that what we're going to talk about is that schools have turned to fast food restaurants to make the school meals. So all the food pyramids and whatever, whether that was good or bad, has been thrown out. And now, is it true that companies like McDonald's are making our school lunches?
Del, we were shocked to find out last year when we tested school lunches, 43 school lunch samples in that process, that the school food lunch directors, the directors for the school lunches, they go to big conferences and there's booths set up and there are fast food companies offering samples of their food, and that's how they choose what is going to be served to our children. Now, previously, they couldn't advertise that. There wasn't any advertising that was actually happening to the children, but since Impossible Foods has started to sort of infiltrate our school lunches, pretty soon Lunchables.
What is Impossible Foods? Is that a company?
That's fake. That's the fake burgers.
Fake burgers. So that's they're moving the school. Okay.
So now they were able to brand and let the children know on the menu it's an Impossible. So they're marketing to our children in school lunches. And then Lunchables will be doing that as well. And so we confirmed with the School Nutrition Association and other school food directors that that's what's happening. Fast food companies are supplying school lunches to our children. There are 30 million school meals that are served every day to our children. And the majority of the ingredients are derived from genetically modified foods like soy and corn. And also they're predominantly derived from crops that are sprayed with glyphosate as a drying agent, like wheat and peas and beans and legumes and things like that. So the wheat is mostly it's contaminated, as we'll get into, with glyphosate. So that's why we tested fast foods.
So you went in and decided to test fast foods because they're the ones supplying this food supply to our children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you worried? Even just doing the show, I just think these are giant, massive corporations. Are you worried about lawsuits or anything like that when you start on this journey? I mean, you're about to call out huge companies for, you know, inadequate nutrition.
Anybody can sue for anything, but what we did was sent samples to a lab. They tested, and we were reporting the results.
Okay.
So I, you know, these are the results. These are what they are. I have had some harassment, but you know, we're going to keep going.
So how about we look into what you found? What is the headline here?
Oh my goodness, that our food is incredibly toxic. School lunches, first of all, just to backtrack to last year, 43 school lunches we tested, because 40 is a statistically significant number that the EPA and the USDA are not supposed to ignore, right?
Okay.
We found that 95.3% were positive for glyphosate. And in comparison, the Detox Project that tested a year or so before that, and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, found that about 60% of the grocery store samples were positive for glyphosate. So 95.3% positive for glyphosate in our school lunches. And this is a known carcinogen, as you have reported, an endocrine disruptor. It causes liver disease at very low levels. A new study out shows that it contributes to leukemia in animal studies, especially in young rats. Over 50% that died were young rats. And so we're very concerned about leukemia and rising levels in children. And there's been, I believe, a 37% increase in childhood leukemia just in the past 10 years. So also it's a chelator. It makes the minerals that of any living thing that it touches, it makes the minerals unavailable, the vitamins and minerals. And it's also an antibiotic.
Just real quickly, because I think this is something that we've reported a lot on, and I have a new audience all the time. You know, this was really, glyphosate was an industrial chemical used to clean out boilers and pipes and rust. They would put it in so it'd suck all the rust and contaminants
out
of the pipes.
Yes.
Chelating.
Yes.
The word chelating, to pull it out. And then someone accidentally spilled the stuff on the ground. It killed every plant in sight. And then they said, oh, my God, let's use it as an herbicide and start killing weeds. And then we made genetically modified crops that when you put this deadly chemical on them, they won't die. I mean, this is basically the cycle we're now in. So we're eating genetically modified food that simply the only modification was just make sure that this deadly toxic poison doesn't kill it. So now we're eating that poison, and whatever happens with a plant that is now resistant to deadly chemicals and what's it doing inside of our body. But as you said, if it chelates all the minerals and things out of pipes, imagine what it's doing inside of your body. And it's a huge antibiotic, right? It's killing your bacteria and things like that.
Yeah, it kills your bacteria as well. Dr. Don Huber, who's a 60-year plant pathologist, says that the way glyphosate functions is it basically gives the plant AIDS. It strips it of its immune system, so the normally harmless bacteria in the soil can kill it. So imagine what that's doing to our bodies.
Wow.
Right? The way that it functions is very, very harmful. And we spray 280 million pounds of it a year on our food crops, still, as a drying agent and as on GMO crops. So it's sprayed not just on the GMO crops that are genetically engineered to withstand it. It's also sprayed as a drying agent so that the farmer can harvest it faster, predominantly on wheat, also on oats and peas and beans and legumes and things like that, a lot of grains.
So they dry those too? Like also every dry grain that
If it's not organic, most likely will have glyphosate on it. So if you're not eating organic, you are eating glyphosate in practically every meal. And that's what we found in the school lunches, 95.3% positive for glyphosate. We found 74% positive for other harmful pesticides, 74% positive. And there were 27 different harmful pesticides. And nobody's testing what is the synergistic effect of that, right? We know when we put vinegar and baking soda into a volcano in second grade, you know, what happens? But what happens when there's 27 different pesticides going on in our children's food for school lunches?
Yeah.
And then we found 100% positive of the school lunch samples positive for heavy metals. And some of them levels 6,923% higher than what the EPA allows in drinking water. And these are highly carcinogenic and neurotoxic toxic heavy metals in our food supply. And we believe this is predominantly coming from the manure that's coming from the confined animal feeding operation, you know, outlets that have thousands and thousands of cows. The Roundup has been found to have heavy metals in it. The cows eat the grains that as we talked about, are sprayed with glyphosate as a drying agent, glyphosate herbicides, and it does not wash, dry, or cook off. So it goes into their feces, into the manure, and our crops are fertilized with them, and then the heavy metals, you know, accumulate. So very concerning levels of heavy metals in school lunches, and then also there were veterinary drugs and hormones found in school lunches, abysmally low levels of minerals. So school lunches, very toxic. We found out that fast food suppliers supply school lunches. We said we got to test fast food too.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So we tested the top 20 fast food brands, and we added in In-N-Out because a couple of our
board. In-N-Out not a fast food brand?
It is, but it's number 33.
Oh, got it.
It's not the top 20.
I was like, yeah. Are you sure that's fast food?
Yeah, okay. It is. Yeah. But it's number 33. But our board members, you know, really insisted because it's been seen as one of the most healthy of the fast food brands.
You have the pictures of the potatoes being chopped right here, right?
It's yes. Healthy, yeah. Fresh. I mean, they're trying. They definitely are trying, right? Yeah. So we wanted to test them too to see maybe they are healthier. Unfortunately, we found that they have issues too, In-N-Out. So we'll get into that. So the fast food brands, 100% positive for glyphosate, Del. 100%.
Wow.
And then the harmful pesticides, it was 76% positive for harmful pesticides. The highest level of glyphosate was in Panera Bread.
Panera?
Yes. And they claim, they have a no-no list. They claim wholesome, good, clean food. So we want people to petition Panera. We have a petition on our website to petition them to put glyphosate on their no-no list. Because if we could accomplish that, that would be a very big deal for the food supply. So Panera Bread was highest.
To what I think, and this is something that when we think of this desiccant drying plants, it's got to be even worse than using it on GMO plants because it's the last contact it has. There's no rain. There's no moment where it then gets washed off. It's like literally let's kill this plant and then harvest it. You know they don't have, and if it doesn't wash off, all that wheat, all that's getting ground up is just the last thing it did was get coated and glyphosate. And one of the tricks, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it will say, and this is, I think, you know, I haven't read much about this, but when I read the bread, it says, you know, non-GMO. And you go, oh, great. But it doesn't say organic, so non-GMO, well, wheat isn't a GMO product.
No, it's not.
But they're using glyphosate to kill it. But by not making GMO, now it still dies, and that's the whole point. So when you're seeing non-GMO, people think, oh, that means it's healthy. No, actually, it's being covered with a chemical, one of the worst chemicals known to man.
Yeah, non-GMO Project Verified does not have anything to do with glyphosate. So that product could still be derived from crops that are highly sprayed with glyphosate. It's very disconcerting. That's why we encourage USDA organic with, you know, along with that. But regeneratively grown organic, there's new brands out there that are very important for making sure it's not sprayed with glyphosate. So, Panera Bread the highest, Arby's was next, then harmful pesticides, 76% positive for harmful pesticides. And one thing that was really concerning was that, for instance, the Pizza Hut pizza, the cheese pizza along with pepperoni didn't have harmful pesticides detected, but the vegetable top pizza for Pizza Hut had 21 parts per billion of harmful pesticides.
Wow.
They both had glyphosate because of the grains, right, in the pizza.
Yeah.
So what we see from things like the Heartland Health Research Alliance, that is, they showed that if Americans could just eliminate, just switch out their vegetables and fruit to organic, we would eliminate 98% of our pesticide consumption. So we're seeing that the harmful pesticide consumption, not glyphosate, right, other harmful pesticides, is coming from the fruits and vegetables. So if you're not eating organic and you're telling children for their school lunches to have an apple, to have, you know, these other fruits and vegetables, you're actually contributing more pesticides to their diet if it's not organic. So we are adamantly opposed to any nutritionist or doctor or school lunch director telling kids eat more fruits and vegetables if they're not saying eat more organic fruits and vegetables. It's very, very important.
Yeah, what's such a bummer about that is just sort of when you think about the socioeconomics around that, we buy organic for our family But it's very expensive. And I used to say, you just got to make that sacrifice. But now I look at people are, you know, as is being reported, you know, coming up short, $5,000 short. Your average household is $5,000 short of their expenses in a year. And then you add organic. And one of the things that I think is we got to really look at is all the subsidies going to this crappy food. Right? I mean, yeah. Like you look at a Cap'n Crunch, this is, or like, I mean, just call out any of this toxic stuff that kids get. It's cheaper than the organic food, but it goes through all sorts of manufacturing that should be expensive, but they're being subsidized by our government when you look into it.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if we were subsidizing the organic side of food so that make it more affordable to people, or at least given an even playing field.
That's what needs to happen. And also, I'm a little disturbed that, for instance, the CEO of McDonald's makes $21 million a year, $1.8 million a month. An average worker at McDonald's makes $26,000 a year, $2,000 a month.
Wow.
And the average American spends $10,000 a year on their medical bills.
Wow.
So what is that? How is that worker even getting by?
Right.
You know, I mean, they can absolutely afford to do some quality control to make sure that these foods don't have heavy metals and toxins in them. And that absolutely needs to happen. So we have more results from the fast food. So the fast food also was 100% positive for glyphosate. I mean, sorry, 100% positive for heavy metals. Cadmium was one of the highest levels. And the highest level of cadmium was found in the In-N-Out French fries. Sorry, Californians.
Really?
Yeah. And then the highest level of lead was found in a Sonic cheeseburger. That was 912% higher than what the EPA allows in drinking water. And these, you know, these heavy metals, again, are very carcinogenic, neurotoxic. We also found veterinary drugs and hormones in these fast foods. And that was very disturbing as well. 40 to 60% of the top 10 samples, we only tested the top 10 for these veterinary drugs because it's very expensive. 40 to 60% had monacin or narasin. And these are antibiotics that are ionopores, meaning they bust through cell barriers. And these particular antibiotics are extremely toxic to horses and dogs at very low levels and cause their hind legs to go paralyzed.
Wow.
I don't know what that's doing to the human population.
What is it doing to children that
but
are eating that?
Everybody I know knows somebody with some type of like neuropathy or, you know, restless leg syndrome,
yeah,
or something going on with their legs. You know, there's a lot of people. So I'm just speculating.
Yeah.
It may or may not be related, but that's, you know, you just don't know.
This is what the NIH show, like, you know,
they should be studying this.
This is
exactly
what they should be studying, not how to pump out the next drug and get a patent on it, you know, to deal with the problems or the autoimmune disease in this country. How about what's causing these autoimmune diseases? I mean, there's no money being put in at all, and we know we're in a crisis. And I,
yeah,
by the way, I keep quoting that number, 54% chronic illness in America. That number was 2011 from a 2006 study. Can you imagine where we're at now?
That's
and they're not giving us, they're not doing that study anymore. We don't know, because I am sure it is off the charts.
It's,
I think it would be horrifying.
I think it's more like 80. I think it's probably more like 80%.
You're right.
Yeah,
it's
somewhere
right
around there. Yeah. And then we also found an anti-parasitic called narcobazine, which is used for coccidiosis in chickens, but it's also an aviary contraceptive. They actually use it to prevent pigeons and geese from laying eggs around airports and, you know, state capitals and things like that around the world.
Wow.
So that was found in a Chick-fil-A sandwich. So what is that doing to Americans on a daily basis?
Right.
Eating
fertility,
you know,
crashing,
yeah, eating an aviary contraceptive. And if, and, you know, we don't know that it's in the school lunches, but if fast food suppliers are supplying to school lunches, what is that doing to our children eating these veterinary drugs on a daily basis? So
right,
we're extremely concerned about veterinary drugs being in the school lunches. I also want to mention that the heavy metal issue is very important. Dr. Michelle Perro, who wrote the book What's Making Our Children Sick, pointed out that this Tosca bill that passed a couple years ago around the Toxic and Pesticide Chemical Act, they excluded pesticides, but they kept heavy metals in. So according to the EPA's own regulations, they should ban school lunches and fast food because of the levels of heavy metals in them.
Wow.
It's off the charts, the amounts of heavy metals that we're getting. So that's a very important factor. Then the next thing we tested for one more thing is today we're announcing that we tested for industrial chemicals. We haven't announced this before.
This is just brand new. We were talking to you and you said this is just coming in today.
Yes, brand new news. So I might have to look at the screen a little bit,
okay,
on this one. But we had the highest levels there. There we go. Jack in the Box, the one sample of Jack in the Box, which was the cheeseburger sample, had this chemical, isobutyl methyl ether, which is known as propane, over 14 million parts per billion. So that's 14,000 wow. parts per million, but over 14 million parts per billion. Yes, in this per serving. And this can cause difficulty concentrating, headaches, nausea, dizziness, weakness, and lightheadedness. The same sample also had over 6.6 million parts per billion per serving of this chemical called butanediol, and it's a central nervous system depressant. And I want people to read these side effects and think about if your family member has exhibited these. Central nervous system toxicity, meaning serious breathing problems, coma, amnesia, combativeness, confusion, agitation, vomiting, seizures, and very slow heartbeat. I know so many people whose children or their husbands or their family members are aggressive after yeah. eating junk food.
Yeah.
This is not okay with me, Del.
Right. Well, I mean, when you see all the discussions about violence in schools, a terrible story out of Nevada this week of a teenager being, you know, beat to death by other kids. And just what is that rate? What is it that it's just like turning people into just violent beings?
Yeah. And it's breaking up marriages. It's destroying friendships and relationships. And I'm extremely disturbed about that. So I really would ask people before they make people wrong or, you know, just have major arguments. Think about, look at the food that what yeah. are people eating and try to be supportive there. So yeah, the industrial chemicals were off the charts and very disturbing. We have more information that will be coming out about that. And one disturbing thing that Dr. John Fagan, who is the head of the lab where we got this testing done and coordinated out of Health Research Institute Labs, he said that there were more toxins in the fast food than there were nutrients.
Wow.
Yeah, we tested for minerals as well. And the mineral levels were so low that just one example, for instance, copper, a person would have to eat 9 servings of Chick-fil-A chicken nuggets in order to get the recommended daily level intake of copper. And copper is very important in children, especially with autism, have an imbalance of copper and zinc. Mm. So across the board, the minerals were abysmally low. They were not sufficient for proper human function. For instance, vitamin B3 levels were so low. Well, there was no vitamin B9 and 12 in any of the samples tested. And that's imperative for cognitive function. So if that's all that children are eating, you know, low-income children are only eating these school lunch meals a day.
Which is what, and that is, I mean, the beauty of the school lunch, and was one of the travesties of, you know, sending everyone home during COVID, mm-hmm. was some of these kids, that's the only meal they're eating.
You. If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays? For Voices on the Wind, with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people on the fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids, dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and come. cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the secret kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Revolution Radio.
Interrupt your normally scheduled programming to bring you this important broadcasting announcement.
Now is the time to explore your greatest potential, embracing truth, health, and wellness while discarding the system and exposing its corruption. Experience true freedom every Saturday night between 6 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Studio B. It's the Jonathan Wright Show.
Find it right here at revolution.radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
No wonder some people just can't get healed if all that chelation is going on. Talk about being foobarred. Sheesh.
Getting, and these families that are underserved, that school lunch program is a lifesaver for these kids. And then just think, what they're getting is just a bunch of toxins and more chemicals than nutrients. It's really sad.
It's a travesty. Yeah, there definitely should be more money allotted for school lunches, and it should be for organic food.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. So then the next thing was we tested for vitamin Bs. Vitamin B3 and all, as I mentioned, vitamin B9 and B12 have been connected to aggressive and violent behavior, a deficiency
of
them.
Don't have vitamin D, B in there.
Yeah, so there's a book called Food and Behavior, A Natural Connection by Barbara Reed Stitt, and she is a Lifetime Achievement Award winner. She studied the food supply for over 20 years. She studied criminals, parolees, and serial killers and high school dropouts. And what she found, that the one thing that they all had in common was not their socioeconomic background or their race, as you might suggest, looking at the prison system. It was actually whether they were black or white or any race or rich or poor, they bragged that they lived on junk food. And, you know, that they were minerally deficient. She tested them and they were low in vitamin B's. And when she replaced the food in the prisons or in the high schools with whole healthy foods, for instance, in one prison, the recidivism rate switched. Instead of 70% going out and coming back, 70% stayed out. And in the high school, out of 5,000 kids...
Just by changing their diet.
Just by changing their food, yep. And in the high school, instead of 500 kids dropping out, only 14 kids dropped out that year.
Wow.
And there's another prison study that showed in just, I believe it was 2 weeks, there was a 37% to a 50% drop in aggressive behavior just when a certain control group of prisoners got minerals and supplements.
Wow.
And this is echoed in an animal study as well. This is very important. I'm so glad to be able to tell this story because I think it's so impactful. There was a farmer in Germany that had saw a decline of hamsters in his field. He had a monocrop cornfield. We know what that means. Mm-hmm. You know, pesticides, herbicides. The soil was like sand. It was very deficient. And this farmer reported it to the University of Strasbourg, and a scientist named Mathilde Tissier studied these hamsters. And what they found was a very disturbing behavior. These hamsters, the mother hamsters, were cannibalistic. They were eating their young on the first day of life. And when they tested these hamsters, they found that they were completely devoid of one vitamin, vitamin B3. And when they administered the vitamin B3, the violent behavior completely stopped.
Wow. Wow.
So this begs to question, right?
Yeah.
What if we could diminish or stop a lot of violent behavior in America by simply having nutrient-dense food
through
or
your
supplementation?
Hair.
What if we could do that, Del? What if children
That's
did
right.
not have
Even
to be dying in school shootings? What if we didn't have to have two mass shootings a day?
Yeah.
You know, and we hear from our moms across America that this is the case. This is what they're begging us to do.
Yeah.
For instance, we had a mom from San Antonio, and she said that she was translating for her friend that was with us, a low-income, single mom, four kids with a language barrier. So she was telling us, my friend wants me to call you and tell you that when her child was 9 years old, her son, he had mental health issues. And the school ignored her until one day they called her and said, you need to come pick up your son. He just threatened to blow the school up with a bomb and kill everyone in it. And she said, well, I told you he has mental health issues and we need help. And so they said, okay, we'll send him to a psychiatrist. So they did. And this psychiatrist prescribed, after assessing him, an SSRI, an antidepressant.
Right, put him on drugs.
But
where the side effect on the box is like suicidal ideations and, you know, the possibility to become a school shooter. Doesn't quite say that, but issues with
you read labels.
Increasing depression. Yes.
Yeah. So first he said that, and then she said, well, what about side effects? Are you sure? Isn't there anything else we can do? And he said, or you can look at what's in the food. What are you feeding him? And she said, well, pizza, you know, much like what's up on the screens here, pizza, you know, hot dogs, donuts, you know, whatever I can get into him. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, have you thought about the preservatives, the dyes, the chemicals, the pesticides, the GMOs, all of that in the food? She said, no. And he said, well, you could either feed him organic or you can give him this drug for the rest of his life. So this mom decided to feed her child organic. She did organic rice and beans. You can do that very cheap, $1.65 a meal maybe, right? And within 2 weeks, the teachers from the school called her and said, we don't know what you're doing, but this is a completely new human being.
Wow, in just that short period of time.
2 weeks. And she called me at that time because there had just been another school shooting in Florida. You remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
It was just the day before. And she said, Zen, I want you to keep doing what you're doing. I want moms across America to get the word out. Because I know that my son, who's now 17, would be one of those kids that would go to Walmart and buy a gun and shoot kids at a school. That's a very hard thing for a mother to admit.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, but he won't do that because he's eating organic food. He's healthy. He's responsible. He's creating community gardens in the area. And I said, you know what? You created a new future for your son.
Yeah.
And not only for your son, but you created a new future for everybody at that school because they're not traumatized. And you might even be creating a new future for all of America because he could run for office, create a service, create a product or something that will make a difference. I mean, think about the inventors of, you know, Google or Facebook or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, it just takes one or two people sometimes to start something that makes a huge difference for the rest of the world. So that's why we do what we're doing, because we want our children and our family members to be able to live up to their fullest potential. And right now, Del, the entire American population is being poisoned with neurotoxins, endocrine disruptors, things that destroy our hormones, and cause people to have mental illness and to have physical, you know, health problems, chronic illnesses. So I can't emphasize this enough, how important it is to not just to go organic, but to get involved and to take action so that every single human being has access to safe, non-toxic, nutrient-dense food, not just the people who can afford organic. Like, enough is enough with that. Like you're saying, you can afford it. I can afford it, but a lot of people cannot, and that affects our entire community.
I just think about, you know, obviously I am in, you know, I'm sort of like less government in every way, but when I look at school systems, these are types of things where I feel like, you know, our audience says, and the last thing I want is my dollars going to making school more expensive. Or is it my responsibility to, you know, give organic school? That'd be expensive. It will certainly increase the cost of tuitions, you know, and public schooling, whatever that is. But what are we, of all the things we invest in, you know, we invest in wars all over the world, hundreds of billions of dollars, nobody bats an eye.
Yes.
Right? Bailing out Silicon Valley banks, little bit of whining, and then we all move on. But God forbid you decide, you know what, how about we invest in the children of America and make sure that all they eat is organic food when they're in schools. They may not get it at home, maybe the family, but at least there, we're making sure they're not being poisoned. So many people just be like, oh, why would we waste our money there? And I want to think, and then you think about this. Well, your kid's at that school. And even if your kid's got the organic lunch, what happens if they're in one of the, if a fight breaks out? Or, God forbid, a school shooting, to think that we could have done something that, you know, did something there. And for anyone that's watching and thinking, oh, that's crazy, it's not. I mean, all the science that we've been showing over the last several years here on the High Wire is showing how more and more we're recognizing that the gut biome is really your second brain. And in many ways, serotonin, all of these things that we thought were affecting emotions is not coming from your brain, it's coming from your digestive system.
Yes.
And Zach Bush, so many great, you know, things that he's worked on showing that we're not even absorbing the nutrients that we are getting, and they're minimized because our biome is so messed up. And just all of these things, investing back into humanity here and into our food systems, and, you know, all of this, there's so much we could do to make this world a better place. And it's not that hard, really. Let's take all the money in the ridiculous places we spend it, bombing the world. How about we go into, like, you know,
and other countries have done it. For instance, there's a movie called The French Organic Food Revolution, where the mayor saw that kids were getting cancer and he saw the chemicals being sprayed on the nearby orchards. He took the money that they were giving to those chemical using farmers and gave it to the school instead and said, use this for organic food. He created a market right, for organic food by giving the money to the schools. And so that's what we need to do in America today. This current administration has set aside a whole lot of money right now for farm to school, you know, meals that is happening.
Okay, so
however, there's a couple problems. For instance, in Wisconsin, one of our advisors, Mark Dudla from Dudla Farms, is a regenerative organic farmer. He can now send food to schools in Wisconsin for free for them. They have got, you know, there's a certain allotment, but if they order flour from beans from him or flour from him, they have to have a way to make it. A lot of these schools no longer have scratch kitchens.
Right.
They only have these trays that they put in microwaves and heat up this food. So instead of making more airplanes to bomb other people, how about putting scratch kitchens back into our schools and empowering the schools to be able to buy local food that's organic, that's maybe regenerative organic, and making the food in their kitchens. And there's a couple organizations have done that. Turning Green has an organization called Conscious Kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so they're in California. You can follow them. And then there's another woman named Hillary Boynton that I met recently at the Children's Health Defense Conference. She has a company called schooloflunch.com. And so you can go and get training there on how to bring in your local regeneratively grown organic food into your schools and make it at your school. And so there are solutions, you know, things that are happening. Also,
is there anything that happens at just sort of the, like, if you're in a school, do you have any power there to get parents together? Can you put pressure? Is this all bigger? Is it state-run issues? Like, what are you seeing out there if you want your school to change these things?
You can do that. And Hillary Boynton from School of Lunch has pointed out that that is possible. And there is money now, grants that people can apply for to get better school lunch food, to get better meals. It is challenging because a lot of the people at the schools will say, oh, well, we have to get, you know, I think it's 15% of the food, the commodities from the USDA. We have to get, but that there's wiggle room there, right? Yeah. That's only 15%. So the rest of the food you can source locally. You can have the money shifted towards those local sources. And there are more bills coming out to make that happen. There's a bill from Christina Shelton that is out right now that I just want to point people's attention to. We have an article on it on our website on Moms Across America. She has a bill that's for healthy school lunches, for more money for healthy school lunches. However, it misses the mark because it's not for organic food.
Mm.
You know, paying more money for this toxic food is just poisoning our children more,
right,
you know?
Right.
So we really want to make sure that that bill is amended, and we're asking people to go to our website, to go to their senators and representatives and tell them co-sponsor the bill only if that funding is for organic food or locally grown, regeneratively grown organic food. You know, it doesn't have to be USDA organic. They just have to stop spraying poisons on it, Del.
Yeah.
They have to stop spraying glyphosate and other toxic chemicals as a drying agent on our food. That is move number one. And that would eliminate the majority of the toxic chemicals that we are consuming
they
from
want
our food supply. And then they've got to switch the fruits and vegetables over to organic. It just, we've been farming for thousands of years without toxic chemicals.
I know.
This is not necessary. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be happening. And it needs to happen now because we're headed for not just a health crisis, but a mental health crisis. And it's a national homeland security issue. There are generals from the U.S. military that have said that our school lunches are a national homeland security issue because it's something like only 25% of the kids that apply to get into the military can get in because they have mental health issues or obesity. So we're putting ourselves, like, not setting ourselves up to be a superpower just because of the food that we're feeding our children. And by the way, China does not feed their military GMOs. I have spoken with a Chinese military person when I went to China to speak there about the food supply, and he told us we do not feed our military GMOs. Of course, Russia doesn't allow them, right? Mm-hmm. So what is America doing? How do we expect to be a superpower if we continue to poison our children?
Yeah.
This has to change.
Zen Honeycutt, again, so informative, and it really is a wake-up call. I think all of us go, well, you know, I don't have time, you know, we're busy, and how bad can it possibly be? It's obviously pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
I didn't know fast food restaurants were supplying school lunches, so really amazing. And for that once in a while we stop by, you know, you have to think about, you know, how many times you stop and get that fast food and do it yourself, you know.
It's
bad.
It's not worth it. I know we're wrapping up here, but I want to thank Children's Health Defense for donating to the fast food testing, Moms Across America supporters. There were a lot of Moms Across America supporters, and also the Centner Academy, our friend.
Yeah. Lila Centner.
Yeah, Lila Centner. Yeah. So we, and David, we really want to thank them. And we want to do more testing, Del. We want to test gluten-free food because we think that the ingredients in gluten-free food, the soy and the corn and the beans and all of that might be much higher for glyphosate.
That's another thing. It's sort of like non-GMO. I think people think gluten-free, healthy, and, you know, I read the ingredients and you just start seeing like these huge lists of ingredients. I was like, I just can't imagine that is the step we're supposed to be taking. We've got to have better answers than that.
We do. And I want to point out that we, you know, Moms Across America, we're testing. And so we would love to have more funding for testing.
Yeah.
We want to test military food as well and children's hospital food. And we have brought this information to Congress. So Kelly Ryerson from Glyphosate Facts, she's a board member on our board, arranged a meeting with through Cory Booker's office, Senator Cory Booker's office, and we had a congressional briefing because the EPA, I've met with them four times, has said, go to Congress. You know, they got to change the laws regarding all this. So we went to Congress. And then they said, go to the USDA. So we went to the USDA and met with them. And they said, well, really, it's the FDA and the dietary guidelines. So we went to the FDA. And that was really upsetting. The meeting with the FDA was really upsetting because they said, well, the EPA, you know, they point us back to the EPA. This is all, you know.
Just go over there. They would just send you around, like literally just spinning circles.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. So they said, go back to the EPA. And the FDA also said, well, the EPA sets the regulatory levels, you know, for the amounts of pesticides allowed and heavy metals allowed in food. We just enforce. So I said, so how do you enforce? And they said, well, we test pesticides and we put out a report. It's 2 years later, you get to see it, than when it actually was done. I said, well, actually, as a member of the Organic Products Advisory a board in California when I lived in California. I saw those lists of what you were testing for. I saw the FDA and, you know, the federal EPA list, and I saw the California Food and Drug, you know, and Agriculture list. And I also saw what the EPA says are the top 25 most widely used pesticides. Top 25 most widely used. And I looked at the list with what the FDA is testing for. I looked at the list of what California Department of Food and Ag is testing for. Guess how many were on these lists? The federal list was two of those chemicals, the most widely used chemicals they were testing for. The California list was three.
So they weren't even testing for the most important things they should be testing for.
Yeah, so I said, I believe that that report that's being put out is misleading to the American public. It's not, you're not actually testing for the most widely used herbicides and pesticides. And John Fagan was on that call from the lab, and he said, how come you guys aren't testing for Paraquat? You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of the most widely used toxic. And they're like, well, we're always, you know, improving we're always looking at that. And so anyway, I just want to let you know that they're passing the buck all over the place.
Indeed.
And that's why what we're doing as consumers is so important. This show is so important. Please donate to the show. You know, getting the word
out. Let's donate to you right now because this is so important.
That.
Moms across America, pull that, you know, check out this website right now. I want you to do your part. We need this information. And by the way, it's information like this that, you know, nonprofits like mine, ICANN, can go and sue over when we have these, you know, proof in our hands. So we're all working together on these issues in order to make a difference in this world. You are just, it's so invaluable right now at this time. No nonprofit could do it all. I mean, I'm just glad, I'm glad you're doing it.
I'm glad you're doing what you're doing.
We're really busy over here, so keep up the great work. And, you know, really, really, really important. And I love that you just are so tenacious.
Thank you.
They got their hands full with you.
We're going to keep going.
All right, you take
thanks,
care.
Thanks, Bill.
Nice coming in.
Thanks so much.
All right. Did you notice that this show doesn't have any commercials? I'm not selling you diapers or vitamins or smoothies or gasoline. That's because I don't want corporate sponsors telling us what to investigate and what to say. Instead, you're our sponsors. This is a production by our nonprofit, the Informed Consent Action Network. If you want more investigations, more hard-hitting news, if you want the truth, go to ICanDecide.org and donate now. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are out there in the world. It's time for us all to step out onto the high wire. Well, these are amazing times, and we keep celebrating here on the high wire all of the different wins, all the movement we're starting to see in the world, the conversations that are changing. Many of them are changing because of the work that we're doing here, that you're sharing the message. There's also warrior mothers all across this country that have built a movement that seems almost unstoppable. Headlines talking about it all the time. There's winning, and then there's winning. And when I'm talking about winning, take a look at this.
Governor Abbott signing a bill into law to ban private employers from having COVID-19 vaccine mandates.
Governor Greg Abbott signed Senate Bill 7 into law today.
Senate Bill 7 will ban private employers from requiring their workers to get the COVID-19 vaccine.
Private employers who require employees to get a COVID vaccine or take adverse action against an unvaccinated employee could face a $50,000 fine.
The Republican governor has long taken a stance against vaccine requirements.
SB 7 is now law in the state of Texas. It's long past time to put COVID behind us and restore individual freedom to all Texans.
Texas is not the first state to create some sort of ban on workplace vaccine mandates. And the state already prohibits governments from requiring COVID vaccinations.
SB 7 becomes law more than 2 years after Houston Methodist Hospital ousted 150 employees for refusing to get vaccinated for the coronavirus. The new law does not exempt hospitals and healthcare facilities from the ban, but does allow them to require unvaccinated workers take precautions.
It has been a priority for him since the beginning of this year when he said that he wanted to end all COVID restrictions entirely. And they're saying again that this is the final piece of that.
This bill is extraordinarily important when it comes to individual freedom of the people in the state of Texas, including the freedom of all Texans to make their own decisions about what health care they want to access and what health care they want to reject.
I said it several times when we were leaving California with our family and ultimately the high wire and our cast and crew, we landed in Texas. One of the reasons was Texas just had such a great group of people that were really changing this conversation with the legislature, with the Senate, with the health committees. When I would come in, I said, I don't know what you're doing here, but you have got real open eyes now listening to this conversation about medical freedom and about the vaccine issue. Well, at the heart of that is Jackie Schlegel, founder and co-director of Texans for Medical Freedom. It is my honor and pleasure to be joined now by Jackie. Congratulations.
I am so excited to be here. Look, the reality is the last 30 days have been so intense. The last 2 years, we just came off a grueling legislative session. Mm-hmm. But the result of that is the most sweeping bill that we have seen in the country to ban COVID vaccine mandates.
I mean, there's several things that about this that I think are really exciting. Number one, it's something you've been at for years.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that and this work that you're doing. But I don't think I've seen, you know, first of all, Texans, one of the things I've liked here is I said, you've been in an offensive position. When people ask me, what do we do? What we should be doing in legislation? I said, get out of a defensive position and get into an offensive position. So we've been bringing a lot of bills here and being proactive. But what makes this unique is I don't think I've seen, correct me if I'm wrong, someone out there might be, you know, correct me, but standing with the governor in these images, seeing you standing up there on the stage, usually when we've had successes, they still kind of keep us in the dark. And you're right there with Governor Greg Abbott's arm around you. It just shows what it means to develop relationships. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that. How important was it, you know, all the years you've been working on this, there are times in California, work that we've done where people will like really be, you know, bring animosity towards the governor, towards people saying they're not listening to me.
Sure.
I know you've had a different approach. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. Well, first, I just have to say thank you to Governor Abbott and his team. These conversations started 2 years ago when medical freedom for me and you, it's something that we've been talking about for years. Mm-hmm. We go back in our community. This is something that we live and breathe. But for many of our elected officials, this is a new conversation, a new topic. 2 years ago, I sat down with the governor's team. Again, thank you to them for giving me the opportunity. And slowly but surely, we have walked hand in hand to pass policy in the state of Texas to protect your rights. And that's what it takes. It's very rarely is this just one bill.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And we'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist. Featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyper thinking. Welcome to the Crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
We now return to Revolution Radio's very own feral hippie,
Mona Radler.
Thank you very much. We are here at freedomslips.org, revolution.radio, on this 23rd day of November, 2023. We are listener-supported, so please do us that favor. Hook us up. Help us stay on air. We truly do appreciate you.
One stop. I mean, this is a process. We had incredible senators, representatives who have been working with us hand in hand for the last 2 years to come to this point where we have the most sweeping legislation in the entire country. I'm incredibly proud of that.
It's, and you have something beautiful here. Can we like pull this up and just, I want to touch it. Can we just see?
It is the most beautiful. I will allow you to touch it.
This is what it feels like when the governor hands you, and this is like the actual bill. There it is with the signature on it. And how do you have it? I mean, like, how did you just get handed to you? I haven't really seen
this before. I'm going to tell you, my jaw dropped when the governor, you know, I was invited to the signing, which was such an honor.
Yeah.
Again, I worked hand in hand with Senator Mays Middleton, Representative Jeff Leach. As you saw in the photo, there were so many representatives who have walked this journey with us at Texans for Medical Freedom the last 2 years. Look, it was so... the negotiations, the intensity of getting this bill to the finish line was unlike anything I had ever been a part of. And our elected officials said, you know what? We are going to stand strong no matter what the lobby does, no matter what the associations do, no matter what the pressure is. We are going to stand with you. We are going to stand with Texans for Medical Freedom, and we're going to stand with the citizens of Texas to get this bill done. So to be up there on that stage with the governor and to have him turn to me, address me by name, yeah, and say, I want you to have this, and wow, hand it to me, I have no words. This is Texans for Medical Freedom. This is the last 8 years. This is everything we worked for, and we're just getting started. Yeah. This is the first of much more to come.
You know, it's interesting. We've had Amy Bond Perk out of California, you know, really, I can work with them. And changing the way that we're doing this, right? Like, we actually hired a lobbyist there. Developing relationship is something that we're really, and I think you're one of the pioneers of that great work. There's other great states. I mean,
sure,
we're not the only ones. But there really is this shift. When I started, there was a lot of, like, anger and rage, yeah, especially in California, SB 277, rightfully so. And I even got caught up in it, right? I mean, there's a famous video where I was chasing Senator Richard Pan down a hallway. And, you know, as you mature, you realize there's better ways to actually do this, that we don't want to be offensive anyway. We want to be invited into the room. And I just feel like this is showing in so many headlines that we're now seeing this huge shift in this conversation, because I think that it's starting to become clear that our position, you know, medical freedom, right to body autonomy, is the most reasonable position and the most American, you know, position you could possibly have. It literally is our right. And I feel like that is starting to really penetrate in government agencies across the country.
1,000%. And to your point, this just didn't happen overnight.
Right.
You know, we've been at this for many years. I've been building the relationships. The associations that even fight against us now are recognizing us as stakeholders. We are being invited into those meetings, mm-hmm, to have the conversations with,
right,
them, because they know the tide is turning here. And our elected officials are proudly standing.
So you're saying even
us,
the lobbyists for pharma are now, like, addressing you and recognizing you have a seat at the table, where they used to say, don't listen to those crazy people, they're a bunch of emotional lunatics. I mean, honestly, that's,
yes,
where this started. It was just everyone was getting written off. Now they're addressing you differently, taking you seriously.
They thought they were going to get an exception for medical providers on this bill. They fought tooth and nail to get that exception. And again, I just have
to. So you're talking about, like, the nurses and doctors in hospitals saying you're working with patients.
Yes.
They have to be, the hospital has to be allowed
to carve out,
force,
yes,
that group,
yes,
to take this vaccine, and they didn't even get that.
We want to carve out. And our elected officials, again, they knew what they were getting themselves into. We sat down before this session even started, and we openly discussed it, and we made the decision there would be no carve outs. And every single day, I want to give a shout out to Dr. Tom Oliverson, Stephanie Click, a representative in the House, a registered nurse who fought tooth and nail to make sure that we had the strongest bill to protect all Texans, including those on the front lines in our hospitals, our nurses, our students, our doctors. They are protected, and it's because our elected officials stood strong. The advocates here in the state of Texas, we played the long game. We were calm. Mm-hmm. We were reasonable. We got in. We had the meetings. We took the wins everywhere we could get it, and we slowly built up until this moment. This bill carries a $50,000 administrative fee, a fine, if you try to implement a COVID vaccine.
Wow.
This is a hefty fine. This is 5 times greater than Florida's bill. And I just point that out to say that if you hang in there, if you do the work, if you continue to advocate, Yeah, we finally have a seat at the table. We are finally getting medical freedom in the place that it should be. I'm so proud and I'm so grateful for the many Texans and the many people who have moved here out of state and who understand this issue is not going away. This isn't one bill. This isn't one legislative session. You need an organization. You need an advocate who takes these issues and gets in there and does the work and sees this policy to the finish line. And we're going to come back and do it again in another year.
Amazing. Jackie Slagle, Texas for Medical Freedom. Let me touch it just one more time. Seriously, congratulations.
Thank you.
Such an amazing achievement. Really a representation to everyone around the country that, you know, how important this work is. People need to get involved with their local chapters, their local groups,
yeah.
You know, dealing medical freedom, get to the Capitol. All of these parents have been visiting and visiting with representatives. It is really turning the tide, and it's,
yeah.
it really couldn't happen, you know, a moment too soon.
This
here.
Is
really,
our win.
This really
is
big.
Our win for everybody in the entire country, not just the state of Texas. And I want, you know, individuals to feel compelled to advocate, to follow our work and get inspired and do something in your state. Because we can do it. We can get it done.
Fantastic. Great work. So proud of you, Jackie.
Thank you.
All right. Well, look, we have a huge show. We're going to be talking to some other powerful warrior moms. I got Zen Honeycutt from Moms Across America has been looking into the chemicals in the fast food being delivered to your kids at lunchtime in schools across this country. What did she find? It's going to blow your mind. And later on in the show, Bree Dressen from React 19 is working on a study with the University of Baltimore looking at COVID vaccine injury. This is a one of a kind moment. There's a deadline moving in. We're going to ask you to help us with that. But first, it's time for the Jackson Report. All right, Jeffrey, man, I love winning. I love the smell of winning in the morning.
Yeah. Well, Del, this is really great news. That's an amazing story. And another huge barometer of parents making the decisions, exercising the rights over their bodily autonomy and that of their children's is all encompassed in this headline right here from AP News. U.S. childhood vaccination exemptions reached their highest level ever. This was from a study by the CDC. It was published in their MMWR. That's their in-house scientific journal. And this is what it reports. We can go right to that study. And it's looking at the coverage in children in kindergarten this school year, 2022-2023. And it says this, exemptions increased in 40 states and D.C., with 10 states reporting an exemption from at least one vaccine for greater than 5% of kindergartners. This is something we've reported, we've tracked throughout the COVID pandemic, this increase of people being, let's use the words of the media, hesitant, skeptical. Mm-hmm. And why has this happened? Is this a surprise to anybody? And not watching this show, but we've just finished 3 years of watching the most rushed and bumbled vaccine rollout we've ever seen. Efficacy trials were not adequate. They didn't even test for transmission. Now we know it doesn't stop them. And the safety trials bordered on criminal. And if anybody in this vaccine conversation before COVID came to the shores knows that this is how it's done. And this is what you said. You said, look, it's a big mistake that they're going to do this same kind of cut and paste safety trial and efficacy trial in full view of the public. And the big secret is the safety trials are the public. That's the big secret for people that have been in this for a long time. So when we see this exemption rate rising, it's because the rollout of the COVID vaccine was so bad. And the safety issues still ongoing are so bad that it forced people to go, wait a minute, they've rubber stamped this unanimously at almost every ACIP meeting. What have they been doing with vaccines before I was awake to this issue?
Right.
Oh my God. And when people look into this, when they look at our ICANN page with the ICANN HHS debate, they see we've been on this since 2016, going back and forth with these regulatory agencies, and what the evidence they're showing is so small that it leads people to say, I'm going to make my own decision here.
Yeah.
So here's another issue. The COVID vaccine, this thing's pushed. It's obviously the coronavirus for children is a minuscule threat compared to these older adults that we were told we have to shield. But they did this. The CDC ACIP committee added it to the childhood schedule. This is the headline. CDC adds COVID-19 shots to list of routine vaccines for kids and adults. That gave cover to schools so they could, schools could say, what? You're going to need that COVID shot now for your kids to go to school if they want to. And this was what Washington, D.C. did. But now we see this headline. It's a full reversal. D.C. students will no longer need to vaccinate against coronavirus. And it says in here, lawmakers added a coronavirus vaccination to the city's list of required immunizations in hopes of curbing the virus in schools. But thousands of families failed to meet deadlines. Members reversed the measure unanimously and without any debate. So,
I mean, that is just old school pushback, right? And it really shows all that is really necessary is just defiance. Just defy ridiculous laws. Do not comply. Do not comply is all it takes. These people didn't have to, you know, march the Capitol. They just said, nope, not doing it. And enough people just said not doing it that they realized, okay, we're going to look really bad here. What are we going to do? Start locking kids out of school. And so those parents in Washington, D.C. just said, oh, hell no. And now they're going to have to change the law and change the law. I mean, it's just, this is what I think the heart of the high wire is really just trying to impress upon people how much power we have as individuals, especially in the United States of America. And hopefully we will, you know, continue as this movement grows, as more and more people start realizing they are allowed to speak truth to power. They're allowed to defy the power of the United States of America because it is actually the government that works for us. We are not the slaves of the government. In fact, they are, you know, under us. They're on our leash and we're putting them back on that leash. And I hope around the world, other citizens are recognizing, you know what? That should be our model too.
Right. And if it can be done in D.C., it can be done anywhere. Because remember, D.C. has one of the hardest pushes for vaccination. They were trying to allow children to get vaccinated without parental consent or knowledge. That bill was being fought for in D.C. And our legal team was the one that
they
really
passed it. I mean,
that.
They passed that they law. Passed I mean, they passed it. And we went in and shut it down, took it to court and won and said, nope, that is illegal. You are not allowed to give a child a vaccine without telling the parents. And the main reason being that the only way the mandates have ever been allowed to be passed is they have to at least tell you that there's a vaccine adverse events reporting system. You have to know that there's this kangaroo court that won't work for you, but you got to know about it. And you're not being informed about it if your child's getting the vaccine and they're not telling you. And so that was the major gist, the heart of that case. And we got it struck down. Just many of the amazing lawsuits that ICANN and our attorneys at Aaron Syrian Glimstad have been winning. It's very, very exciting.
How many children?
Yeah. And I mean, looking back, that was one of the high watermarks of recklessness with his childhood vaccine schedule.
Dwarfed only now by winning back the exemption, the religious exemption from Mississippi. So, you know, we keep beating our own records. It's really very cool.
And all in such a short time. I'm trying to impress upon the public here how fast this turnaround has happened in such a short time. It's been working behind the scenes, so to speak, out of the greater world, the greater public's view for a long time. A lot of people doing a lot of hard work, but it's broken through now. It's very clear. And here's another thing that may have been leading to people's changing attitudes on this childhood vaccination schedule is reporting. You and I are kind of like old school reporting. We used to get called a lot of names, but now it's just common sense to ask these questions. And even local reporting, here's a headline. This is starting to look more like this. People are just asking these questions. Orange County 15-month-old dies 2 days after well visit vaccinations. Here's some of this tragic story that thankfully is now getting the attention it deserves. Take a look.
All right.
Happy birthday, dear Melody.
Melody Rain just celebrated her first birthday in July.
Everything about her was just pure light. She loved to dance. She loves her sister.
3 months later, the 15-month-old toddler from Greenwood Lake died 2 days after a routine well visit and three vaccines.
The final result was the cardiac arrest. It just completely shut her entire body down.
Catherine Palumbi says her daughter showed no signs that anything was wrong until that day. Hospital records show the baby suffered organ failure.
They brought me into the room. I watched. I just seen her laying there. They said time of death, 11:13. And I just completely hit the floor. And I put the cross in here and everything.
These are the flowers from her funeral. Yes.
We reached out to the Herbert Kanya Group in Warwick, where Melody was seen, but they declined to comment. According to the CDC, up to 10 vaccines are recommended for 15-month-olds. And Melody's records show she had three for varicella, DTaP, and Hib. Catherine believes they were too much for her daughter's body. to handle.
Trust your gut and don't let them push anything onto your children.
I think people that are just tuning in, waking up, maybe COVID woke them up, maybe you're watching this show for the first time, you can't imagine what a sea change that represents. There has been a blackout on any conversation about vaccine injury and certainly vaccine death, SIDS, all of it, for over a decade now. Media has not been covering it. COVID broke that seal. This is the biggest mistake they ever made, Jeffrey, because they did it, as we said, made the sausage right in front of the public and have denied all of the harms. Everyone, we saw the recent article that you brought up just over a week ago. 25% of Americans believe they know somebody that was killed by the COVID vaccine. 40% say that they are leaning and believing that direction, that they know somebody and would actually, and the people would sign up for any sort of class action lawsuit. And yet the CDC still says it's not happening. It's that level of defiance against the reality of what's going on that I think is blowing this open. Reporters saying, oh, come on. And now we are starting to see a shift where we're seeing news stories covering vaccine injury again, as they should have been the whole time. This is all a part of what we're talking about, this huge shift in the consciousness around this conversation now in America. It's amazing.
And it's a huge story. And should we be questioning it? Remember, if we look at the public health side, we're supposed to understand that these vaccines are making us healthier. We're the healthiest nation in the world, and we need all these vaccines to keep us safe. That's the talking point. We're the most vaccinated country in the world, and it's for our health. Just remember that. So the problem is, like last week, we reported on this, we see headlines coming from the U.S. and the CDC like this. The U.S. infant mortality rate rose last year. The CDC says it's the largest increase in two decades. And then this headline out of Stat News, life expectancy for men in U.S. falls to 73, 6 years less than women per study. And you go in here and you read it, and it says the decline in life expectancy in the U.S. suggests that advancements in medical treatment are no longer sufficient to counter ongoing public health crises. This is Brandon Yan. He's the lead author of the study. He says we have a health care system that is very advanced in treating illnesses and advanced diseases. But for the most part, it is not very good when it comes to preventative care. Now, in 2019 in the U.S., that number was 78.8, almost 79. So we dropped a ton. Now, understand where we're at. Japan, Korea, Portugal, U.K., all Italy, all 80 years and older. Even China and Turkey are like 78 years. So we're 73. We're scraping the bottom of the barrel. So this is why people are questioning this larger, what's going on? What are we doing more than other countries? What have we done the last 3 years, especially? These are the big questions people are asking, and it's okay to ask them. People have the right to ask them and the right to make their own choice.
Absolutely, and I think what you see here is the argument pharma's been making is they've taken over our hospital systems, taken over our doctors. Our doctors have been turned into drug pushers. That's basically all they do. They've got a drug to deal with whatever situation. Couldn't possibly be your diet. Couldn't possibly be the fact that you're not exercising, or maybe you're just not drinking enough water. Forget all that. Just start taking drugs. And they've been bragging about how, oh, we've extended your life's expense. Extended your life expectancy. Well, we've been reporting, and now it is just on this major decline. And you're right, and the article's right. They suck at preventative care. Injecting yourself with pharmaceutical products to make yourself healthier in the future clearly is not working. I mean, this is a disaster. We're the most vaccinated nation in the world. We take more drugs than anyone in the world. The pharmaceutical industry is a part of the American lifestyle, and it is clearly now killing us. It is time to eradicate them, to get them out of our government, get them out of our regulatory agencies, stop using the NIH to produce nothing but drugs, and start using the NIH to investigate what are these drugs doing to our society.
Del, this is a huge week. There's so many long-standing stories that we've been tracking for many years that are coming to a head just this week, and it's trying to do this. So let's jump to this story here, speaking of really making people's making their own decision. This is the story of Bayer Pharmaceutical Company. They're from Germany. In 2016, they acquired Monsanto for over $60 billion, which was the largest ever buy by a German buyer, largest ever investment acquisition by a German buyer ever. And of course, at that point, investors jumped on board. This was the greatest thing, this huge juggernaut, Bayer and Monsanto, obviously acquiring Monsanto because of their flagship product, Roundup. The
glyphosate. Yeah, great product. Herbicide. Good idea, Bayer. Genius.
Right. And one of the things Bayer didn't tell its investors is there is a global groundswell, basically yearly marches against Monsanto. People do not like this company. There's some major issues with our products, but that was swept under the rug. Well, there's lawsuits, and that's where Brent Wisner comes in. This is attorney Brent Wisner. He was on our show. He won the first lawsuit, helped Dwayne Johnson. He was the plaintiff, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma from glyphosate use. He was spraying it in public parks. Yeah. And so this just these lawsuits just keep coming and coming and coming for these cancer cases. And things just really race to a head at the end of October here. So I'm going to run through three quick Reuters headlines just to give you the space of this. October 20th, Bayer must pay $1.25 million in Roundup cancer trial jury fines. 7 days later, Bayer ordered to pay $175 million in latest Roundup cancer trial. And then another one just a couple days later, October 31st, Bayer ordered to pay $332 million in Roundup cancer trial. So, of course, that leads to some questions. You get some really nervous investors at that point who were already on edge over what's been going on over the last 3 or 4 years. So this is Reuters again. Bayer investor urges rethink after latest glyphosate defeat. It says in here, after this week's loss, investor nervousness is mounting about the company's future litigation liabilities. At the last count, settlements were still pending in 47,000 of the approximately 160,000 wow. claims filed, according to Bayer.
I mean, just so, think, when you're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars per case and 160,000 or whatever in the queue, man, that spells trouble for that investment by Bayer.
And the Bayer has been having a big problem trying to settle all those cases, trying to come to an agreement like Johnson & Johnson or like the Sackler family and the opioids yeah. situation. Bayer's not having that type of success. So this is the headline now you're seeing out of Reuters. Bayer weighs break up options as management jobs cuts loom. So last year, it posted a quarterly gain of 546 million euros. This quarter, it posted a net loss of 457 billion euros. So this wow. is a huge change. Cities are pulling Roundup from parks and playgrounds. This product is not popular, and the scientists are really backing up a lot of the science and digging into this a lot more. What's happening now? So putting Bayer aside for a second, the overall background in the United States, just like in 1986, when the 1986 Act passed, giving vaccine manufacturers basically liability from these lawsuits. So they were saying, look, so many people are suing us for these vaccines because they're getting harmed by our shots. We're going to need protection if you want us to keep making shots. And so that's what the government essentially did. Similar thing is happening now. This is called the Agriculture Labeling Uniformity Act. And this is Carrie Gilliam. She's been reporting on this topic of pesticides for over a decade. And she wrote this in The Guardian. It's an abomination, the headline. It's an abomination, battle brewing over proposed U.S. laws to protect pesticides companies. So if we go to this law and we look at it, it's some legalese in here, but I'm going to break it down to the best of my ability here. So this is the Agriculture Labeling Uniformity Act. And it says in here, it shall be applied to require uniformity in national pesticide labeling. So they want all the same label on all pesticides. So remember.
Thank you. FreedomSlips.com.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. Time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
A big part of this lawsuit was people were not informed of the dangers on the labeling. So they're saying, yeah, well, just don't worry about that anymore. No matter what new science comes forward, we're just going to have a one-stop shop on the label here. It may cause harm, you know, use it at your own risk. That's going to cover us blanket. But then it goes on to say this. It says, and this act prohibit any state instrumentality or political subdivision thereof or a court from directly or indirectly imposing or continuing in effect any requirements for or penalize or hold liable any entity for failing to comply with requirements with respect to labeling or packaging that is in addition to or different from the labeling or packaging approved by the administrator under such an act. So basically it's saying you can't sue us in court. And these court cases that are happening, this is going to provide some background. You can't sue us municipalities, cities, you can't remove these things because the labeling wasn't adequate or because some science you think may be there. If it's not in the label, you can't make these administrative decisions. So this is a big, and of course, all pesticide companies are backing this, all the lobbying companies.
It hasn't passed yet, right? This is just a proposed law. I mean, if this doesn't show people where we're at now, that this is complete and total regulatory capture, these regulatory agencies you've been trusting with your life, the CDC, the FDA, all under the HHS, mothership, HRSA in this case, trying to block literally like liability protection for chemicals being sprayed on your food and things that you care about, your children, you're going to have no right to sue because the government is no longer your government. Your government is now owned by these pharmaceutical companies, by these the petroleum and agricultural companies that are just destroying our lives, and our government is helping them do it and protecting them. This is why we are so involved in this space right now, bringing lawsuits and everything else. We've got to stop this. I mean, this insanity must end now. It's crazy.
And so over in the European Union, they give authorization to glyphosate, this chemical, for a 10-year block. So that authorization is actually up now. And so in October, there was a re-vote because the entire European Union, all the representatives have to vote on this. And there needs to be something called a qualified majority, which is over 50%. So to re-up this thing for another 10 years. So this was in October, the headline, EU can't reach decision on prolonging the use of chemical herbicide glyphosate. So that's good news, because it's good news if you know the science and you've been following this, because they're saying, let's pause this for a second. We need to do more studies on this. And that's what there was not the qualified majority. And one of the reasons is because new science, not just cancer, but Parkinson's, this was in The Lancet. They're saying the inadequacy of current pesticide regulations for protecting brain health, the case of glyphosate and Parkinson's disease. So just like we had on the attorney for fluoride being put in the water, they said, yeah, fluoride's great for your teeth. But remember on the stand, we played that clip and they said, well, did you check for children's brain health? Well, no, we didn't really do those studies. But so this is a similar thing is happening. We have glyphosate, it's safe for use, and we're finding this cancer issue. But now we're finding a Parkinson's issue possibly with these pesticides and glyphosate specifically. So the European Union has paused that vote. It was supposed to vote today for another trying to basically get this consensus. They voted, and here's the headline, EU to renew herbicide glyphosate approval for 10 years. But if you go into this article and you look at this, it says this qualified majority was not hit. So again, what? They were not able to hit this qualified majority. So what happens, the rules is, if they do not hit the qualified majority, the European Commission steps in and they make the choice. And what they're going to do, or what they have signaled they're going to do, is step in and approve it. So this is essentially a phantom consensus. So you're going to hear in the headlines, the EU approved it, it's all okay, and they're going to use this in the courtroom. The pharmaceutical, the bear in the lawsuits, they're going to say, the EU has upped this for another 10 years, it's safe, but there was no consensus. So that's a very important little piece to really take home from this.
Looks like over there in Europe, you guys have got to do your work, too. We all do. You know, you are being robbed blind, where they're making you point to all the other issues you're screaming at and you're trying to decide. The news has got you yelling about, you know, this inconsistency or that, or how your neighbor's screwing you. You know, they're running out. They're running out the door with all of your, you know, freedoms and your health in their hands. This is crazy. It must be stopped. All around the world, we have got to now stand up against our governments that are clearly now being purchased by these giant mega international corporate interests.
Absolutely. And so, Dell, let me shift gears a little bit. We're going to take a unique look at the United States right now in an interesting view here. And it starts with this story. Fed up migrants who trekked thousands of miles to U.S. already heading home. American dream doesn't exist. What they're talking about in this article are Venezuelans who came from the border that were bused to Chicago. And they're saying, look, I mean, besides the fact that Chicago in the fall and moving into the winter is freezing, but they're saying, look, the American dream doesn't exist. We've tried and we're going back home. They're getting tickets. They're flying back, doing whatever they can to do this. And so why is this happening? Why is all of this happening? Well, taking a look at one of the big issues here, the United States has a credit rating, just like you and I have credit ratings. There's credit rating agencies. And if we have good credit, we can take out loans, have low interest rates. If we have bad credit, we don't get those kind of luxuries. Well, for a country, it's the same thing, except also countries, people invest in their bonds, buy their bonds. They're safe countries to do business in. Well, this has just happened to the U.S. This was just over the summer. Fitch downgrades U.S. credit rating, citing mounting debt and political divisions. It's the first time this has ever happened. Yeah. Then just recently, Moody's changes U.S. credit outlook to negative. This was the New York Times. Another big hit. And I'm looking over these headlines and I'm seeing something that looks like this. So we're going down, but then I see this headline: El Salvador's rating raised by S&P on local debt financing. S&P is another rating agency. And so I look and say, well, this is a Central American country, and this a lot of these people are coming up from these areas, South America, Central America, to the United States, and their credit rating's being raised. What did El Salvador do? Well, you see this headline. Just about 2 years ago, El Salvador became the first country to adopt Bitcoin as an official currency. Wow. So one of the issues here in the U.S. is the rising inflation rates, the purchasing power of the dollar. It's really causing some hardship for people to just try to live a daily life. Yeah. So El Salvador said, we're going to take this cryptocurrency, the first one, and it's decentralized. We're going to try it as an official currency. And so far, it looks like it's really been a good payoff. This is kind of the exact opposite of a central bank digital currency where everything would be central through the Federal Reserve.
Right.
The Bitcoin is completely decentralized. So you look at the World Bank, they release rankings every year and they classify countries by income level. Well, if you look here at the most recent rankings, El Salvador just made a jump. They went from lower middle income to upper middle income on their way to high income, which is where the U.S. is in other countries. So this is another positive thing. But what's most interesting about this story is we had the president of El Salvador interviewed by Tucker Carlson. This was before Tucker Carlson left Fox. And it's an interesting view because this is an El Salvadorian president who is looking in to America from outside. And listen to what he had to say.
The demise of the U.S. has to come from within. Right? The enemies have to be inside, not really outside. No external enemy can cause so much damage as internal. It's an internal operation. You're watching internal operations here. You can see them in cities that were pristinely beautiful 30 years ago are wastelands right now. You would see people. I mean, I'm from El Salvador, a third world country in Central America, and myself, I can see cities here and say, I want to live here. So that would be unthinkable 3 decades ago. Totally unthinkable that a Salvadoran wouldn't want to live in a U.S. city, in a U.S. main city. I mean, Los Angeles, San
New York,
Francisco,
Chicago. Yeah.
Well, Philadelphia, Baltimore.
It's really amazing, you know, I mean, and it's true. We are experiencing a crushing demise here in America, infighting like we've never seen, political divisions, which is some of the downrating that's happening, where we can't even communicate with each other. The news agencies, I believe, are fueling that rage against our neighbors when honestly the truth is if we turned off our television sets and started talking about the issues that actually affect our lives, we would find that we are all in agreement. And the real problem is the propaganda coming from our television, the division being driven by a government that we are pointing out as being owned and run by, you know, industries and outside influences, if not controlling us, the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the World Bank, IMF, all of these things are like working to pull us apart. You know, I was just in, you know, as he talks about it, we see like the squalor and things that are happening in big cities. The crime rates are up. I was in Portland, Oregon recently for an event, and I went to a CVS because I needed deodorant. And I swear it was the craziest thing I've ever seen. It was empty shelves just like this. And there was like one shelf that had deodorant and there was locks on it and it was locked away. I had to find the one person. This isn't employing anybody. Nobody can work here because the place isn't making any money at all. I found the one person that's supposed to help. Took me 20 minutes, came up and he's unlocking the deodorant. I said, really? You got to lock deodorant? He says, literally the only things left in this store are what under lock and key. They're taking advantage of some law that's like if, as long as it's under $1,000 or something, you can walk right out the front door and you're the one in trouble if you report it. If you call the police and it was under $1,000, you're in trouble for even bothering them. I mean, this is what's happening to the United States of America. You just, you know, and I said to the guys, like, I don't see that in Texas. Like, no, you don't, because in Texas, people own guns. Now, I don't know, you know, how that weighs in, but it is amazing we are seeing this happening in what was supposed to be the beacon of light and hope in the greatest nation in the world.
A lot of people know something's going on, and there's a lot of moving parts to this story as well. But watching the president there of El Salvador, it reminds me of the interview that G. Edward Griffin did, and he's really one of the founding fathers of alternative research. We had him on the show, actually, just recently. And this was an interview he did so many decades ago with a Russian KGB defector, Yuri Bezmenov. And Bezmenov gave kind of a brief overview of how things like this may have happened. Take a listen if you never heard this before.
All right. You spoke several times before about ideological subversion. That is a phrase that I'm afraid some Americans don't fully understand. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean by it?
Ideological subversion is the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see it. There is no mystery. There is nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage intelligence gathering looks more romantic. It sells more deodorants through the advertising, probably. That's why your Hollywood producers are so crazy about James Bond type of thrillers. But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process, which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, aktivne meroприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process, which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see, most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts or half-baked intellectuals, are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind. Even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of the United States society.
It's really unbelievable to hear that when, you know, you could have said 40 years ago, and obviously Ed Griffin, who, by the way, is the center point of, Plandemic, the Great Awakening, which we launched here on the High Wire. If you haven't seen it, it's just a brilliant film that deals a lot with the work that Ed Griffin did, this interview. But think about what he's saying, and you think about the news right now. How many universities have children that actually, like students, college students, that believe that communism just hasn't been actualized the right way? We should be moving in a communist direction. You can clearly see it. He's saying we're going to be inside your schools. We're going to be teaching your kids. And when you talk about demoralization, one of the stats that's up right now, under 20%, I mean, like, you know, like, I think it's down to like 18% of students, college students in America have hope for America. The rest believe right. that it's just a dismal, there's no hope. I'm never going to be able to own a home. The dream of America is dead. So, I mean, whether or not the KGB did this or not, boy, did that guy, you know, prophesize 40 years ago, almost to the date now, where we now find ourselves, where, you know, third world nations are looking down on us.
Isn't it?
And one of the takeaways from that for me was, it's not the Russians did this. It's psychological warfare. And we saw lots of groups.
Right.
And really, we've talked about on this show, when you dig down, a lot of these groups are connected by the roots. So when you see like the psychological warfare that happened during COVID-19, and especially in the UK yeah. with the nudge units and the PSYOPs, this is alive and well.
And making us turn each other in, as the El Salvador yes. president said, right? It's internal. You are eating yourself. There's nothing that could come from the outside and do as much damage to America as is being done inside of America to
right.
each other.
Right. And, you know, we look at cities like the El Salvador president said, San Francisco, he said, I wouldn't want to live there. And San Francisco it's a beautiful city in many rights, but we all see that something is not right. And it's happened very quickly. And a lot of people aren't questioning it. What's going on? How did this happen so quickly? Why aren't people living in the city addressing this? Why are people turning a blind eye to this when, like, the El Salvadorian president is saying, I don't want to live there? And this is another thing that people from the outside that aren't operating with, let's just call it this American mindset of looking the other way for a lot of people are pointing this out. And another media that's pointing this out is Chinese media. This is kind of embarrassing, but this is the headline here. San Francisco is slammed as ruined city and hell in Chinese media ahead of APEC summit. So the APEC summit just ended, but this is what this article says. While the city gears up for the event, U.S. Chinese radio used the headlines Ghost Town San Francisco to have major blood exchange as APEC will bring the safest week in history to the city. Other headlines include the phrases garbage city, ruined city, and fallen city, as crippling drug issues and widespread homeless problems continue to cause problems for the city. And then we look at Reuters, San Francisco patches over homelessness, drug abuse for APEC. And then another headline, drug addicts, homeless, plaguing San Francisco's downtown, miraculously disappear ahead of Biden and Xi Jinping summit. So they were the governor of New York, I'm sorry, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, and the mayor of San Francisco, they've made really no real effort to clean this situation up, to help these people, to get them off the street. And all of a sudden, when you have this summit, you have the Chinese leader coming in, they miraculously disappear. And where did they go? Everyone's questioning these things. And this is what Gavin Newsom had to say about it. Take a listen.
That's my emphasis. I see what you see. And we all want and see a brighter future as well. And so I'm really excited. I know folks say, oh, they're just cleaning up this place because all those fancy leaders are coming into town. That's true, because it's true. But it's also true, for months and months and months prior to APEC, we've been having different conversations.
I cannot believe he admitted that, though you've been complaining about this for years, your businesses are leaving, the entire mall of all the expensive shops now are boarded up, you know, in downtown San Francisco, there, one of the big shopping hubs is totally closed down. But when a dictator from China comes over to visit, Gavin Newsom, so embarrassed about what his house looks like, he finally cleans it up for the dictator's arrival. And to think that this may be the future of American political royalty, as many people, you know, are starting to think this might be the guy that jumps in to replace Biden if he's not able to run. I mean, God help us if people that, you know, only clean up their own house when dictators visit, you know, start running this nation. I mean, I guess they already are. I mean, when we look at this whole nation, we're not here to get political, but we're in a bad shape here. It's really embarrassing and so unnecessary. When, you know, we could have jobs just cleaning up. You should give people the, hope in America again. It would be really, really nice to see. Just wow.
And we have to question, you know, we really have to question where are we when, you know, countries like North Korea or even China, when the media spotlight's on them, they have a perception that they put forward that it's not in alignment with how their country lives on a day-to-day basis. And that's just what happened in San Francisco right now. So we really have to question, what are we really doing here? What are we allowing these leaders to get away with? Because there's a lot of questions, hard questions that have to be asked, and a lot of solutions that have yet to come.
Amen. All right, Jeffrey, really great reporting. A lot of hope in it, but also, you know, need for us to work harder for more hope.
Absolutely.
So keep up the great work, and I'll see you next week.
All right, Del. Thanks.
All right. Take care. All right. Well, look, when it comes to successes, you see the headlines. More and more people are now questioning the vaccine program. We're very happy about that. I mean, whether or not you should really, if you're questioning how is it this organization feels comfortable celebrating the fact that people are backing away from the vaccine program, then you should be visiting our website, the Informed Consent Action Network. ICanDecide.org is where all of our papers, in fact, our interaction between Health and Human Services and our nonprofit, we sent a letter with citations. You can click on them and see all the science that we laid out that shows that this vaccine program is a disaster. We happen to know that the CDC, FDA, NIH all work together to try and answer our query, and we got a giant letter back, and then we responded. We took 6 months, had all of our scientists and experts and legal help from attorneys Aaron Seary and his team to go comb through it, and then we responded to that letter with all that's wrong and what they're lying to the world about. We've never gotten a response back on that, but that makes up a book that we put out that you can also get online, the Vaccine Safety Project. You'll find it on the website where all that information is laid out for you. It's part of what we're doing as bringing transparency to this conversation. You just got to look at it. As this vaccine program has increased, we have seen the increase of autoimmune disease and neurological disorders. We had roughly 12% autoimmune and neurological disorders in the 1980s before the 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Program happened. At that point, we were getting about 10, 11 vaccines by the time we were 18. As soon as we took away liability from the industry, it exploded. And then by the 2000s, we were getting 53 doses. That's 72 vaccines if you separate them out. And look what happened to our chronic illness rate. Now, more than half of our kids as of 2011 have a permanent, really disability, either a neurological or an autoimmune disease they'll be dealing with the rest of their lives. This program, we believe, has just substituted what tend to be trivial childhood illness and replaced it with permanent lifelong autoimmune disease. I'm not saying vaccines are the only things that do it. Also, all the pharmaceutical products that we take, the drugs that are in our, you know, water systems, but also fluoride and pesticides and herbicides. I mean, look, it's a toxic soup we've been living in. But this is what I want to say. It doesn't matter what you want to blame. Here's who you should blame. Your regulatory agencies, the CDC, the FDA that we have shown you all day long right now on this show are obviously working for these, you know, corporations that are poisoning you. And all our regulatory agencies are doing is trying to protect them, not us, protect them from being able to be sued so that they can continue to poison us. Well, all of this is leading to a huge change. And there was a big headline this week about some of the work that we've been doing. Here it is. You want to talk about a sea change? Anti-vaxxers are now a modern political force.
Everybody have a great day.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Check in every Thursday night for the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show. Studio A, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
right here at the number one listener-supported radio station, Revolution Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me.